This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. A new and terrifying global study of drinking water has found massive contamination by microscopic plastic fibers. The study is the first of its kind and identifies previously unknown contamination of water flowing out of faucets in cities as far away as New Delhi and as close by as Washington, D.C. The origins of the microscopic fibers is still being debated and its impact on human health still unknown. However, animal studies indicate that it's likely not a good thing for so many of us to be ingesting so much plastic. My guest is Chris Tyree. He is a journalist with Orb Media and lead author of the article entitled Invisibles, the Plastic Inside Us, which covers the study. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So I suppose we shouldn't be surprised at how pervasive plastic is in our water, given that it is literally all around us. What prompted this study? Where did you get the idea to even approach this issue? Where did scientists, figure out that this was something that needs to be examined?
Right, that's a great question. You know, a few years ago, we had scientific studies done on the Great Lakes and determined that they were filled with microbeads. And that led to bipartisan legislation passing, banning microbeads in cosmetics. And so we started looking at that and a couple other angles on this story. And we really realized that nobody's really done a very in-depth study on all the microplastics.
Microbeads being the sort of things that you found in these hand washes or facial, exfoliants, where instead of salt or whatever would be a natural exfoliant, manufacturers were literally adding tiny plastic beads, which on the face of it sounded like a terrible idea, but people bought the stuff.
Right. You know, when they were invented, I think they had no idea that they would have been used quite the way they were. Some microbeads are very useful in treating cancer. So there is an upside to them sometimes. When they did the study and they realized just how pervasive microbeads were in the Great Lakes and then in subsequent studies all over the world, it started becoming an alarming number because they're not being filtered out. And I think that's sort of where we kind of took a cue from. If they're not being filtered out in the wastewater treatment plants, what makes us think they're being filtered out when they come back into our waterways, right, into our water filtration systems? So we started looking at all the different ways that, all these different kinds of microplastics, from the microbeads to microfibers that come from synthetic clothing to tire dust is made of it. Tires are mostly, not natural rubber anymore. They're a type of plastic. Even paints, acrylic paints, nobody really thought to think, oh, wow, I just cleaned my paintbrush straight down the drain. Well, all that paint is really just acrylic microplastics, really. And nobody's really even done much on that, frankly. So when we started digging in and we realized that there's this kind of untold story around microplastics, we were interviewing one of the lead researchers, a guy named Mark Brown out of Australia, who was the first to really determine that microfibers were probably even more pervasive than microbeads. And during that this sort of pre-reporting interview I was doing with him, he said, I'm having a hard time getting a clean blank from my tap in my lab to be able to run my studies. I have to filter the water coming out of my tap numerous times in order to have a very clean sample with no microplastics.
Just to compare it to like a controlled sample.
Exactly, a controlled sample. And that kind of like, that's where the light bulb went off. And I'm like, oh my God, if this researcher is having a hard time getting clean water out of his faucet in his lab in Sydney, Australia, what makes me think that that's not coming out of my faucet here in Charlottesville, Virginia? Because we're, Orb is this amazing, we're a small organization, but we have a very strong model of how we tell stories and how we use data and how we use social social journalism to be legs of a stool that help us report our stories. And so we devised this this study with to look at tap water. We could get citizen scientists to sample water around the world because we have a great network. But we knew we needed a key and that to oversee this. And so we went back to the same researcher who did the work in the Great Lakes, who found those microbeads, Dr. Sherry Mason, who's she's pretty renowned in the field of microplastic research. And so she'd agreed to oversee this study. And we worked with a researcher named Mary Kasuth from the University of Minnesota, and we sampled 159 locations from around the world. And you're right, it was pretty alarming what we found.
Let's actually watch a short video from that was part of your reporting in Orb Media before we get to what the results were. My guest is Chris Tyree, journalist with Orb Media, and here is a short video explaining where this plastic oil might be coming from.
Less than 100 years ago, chemists first began to bend and reorder petroleum molecules into a lightweight substance that could be molded into just about any form. Since then, inventors have created hundreds of different plastics, and industry has found millions of uses for them. Today, more than 322 million tons of plastic are produced each year, up from just 1.5 million tons in the 1950s. If plastic was a country, it would be the world's 20th largest economy, bigger than those of Austria, Argentina, Egypt, and dozens of others. The world wants plastic. Look around you right now. Look at your home, your office, your street, and try to count the plastic articles. How high did you reach before giving up? That's just the stuff you can see. Beyond the naked eye is a realm of invisible plastic. On purpose and by accident, fibers, fragments, and chemicals infiltrate every aspect of daily life. Every start and stop of every car sends microscopic particles of styrene tire dust wafting into the air. Each wash of every single synthetic garment releases up to 1,900 microscopic plastic fibers into waterways. Every rinse of every paintbrush sends liquid plastic down the drain. Every straw and plastic bottle that rides the ocean waves will break down into fragments smaller than the diameter of a human hair. Plastic doesn't go away. It only gets smaller.
And that's a short video produced by Orb Media about the article that we're discussing with my guest, Chris Tyree. The article is entitled Invisibles, the Plastic Inside Us. Wow. So plastic is literally everywhere. What were the cities whose tap water was tested? And what did you find? Is there a place on Earth where one doesn't find plastic in one's water?
Well, we don't know the answer to that last question. That would surprise me if we didn't find it everywhere, to be honest. We took samples from five different continents in multiple cities. So Quito, Ecuador, London, Paris, New York, Berlin, Jakarta, many samples, and then they're all sort of listed on our website under our report. We're very transparent about the study. It is the paper that is going to be written off of this study by Mary Kasuth will eventually go into peer review sometime in the next 6 to 9 months. It's hard to say how long that process normally takes, but the fundamental results are pretty alarming. And we had no idea. We went out in the field. We really didn't know what we would We went out reporting before we actually had the results of the study. And so when we got back and we started doing our production, and we realized finally that, oh my gosh, this is actually staggering, these numbers.
And is there a difference between, rural communities versus urban communities? Is there a difference between developing countries or developed countries?
We found the rate of microplastics in the United States higher than anywhere else. So,
So the U.S. higher than anywhere else, higher than New Delhi.
Correct. I mean, you have to keep in mind the sample size. There are literally millions of taps around the world, but we were very particular. We wanted to know, is this in people's drinking water? It doesn't matter where you live in the world. Is it in your drinking water? Because, sort of the ethos of Orb is how do these, we're a global community. communications shrunk our world. And we have this story that we all have to, that we share. We share our human story. And water is a necessity for life. So it was kind of a no-brainer that we would look at this in this manner from our perspective at ORB. But
So what's the level of contamination we're talking about here? Explain it. You know, if I get a glass of water from my faucet in Southern California, what might I expect that I am ingesting at that very moment?
It's really hard to say. It really does depend. But I can tell you this. The studies are pretty clear that there's plastic coming out of your faucet. And whether those are microfibers or other microparticles that we didn't even examine, there's likely plastic in it. The proliferation is just amazing. It's just like we have so much plastic. So the level of contamination coming out of that faucet in sunny California, I mean, you're not just using that for drinking. I mean, you're using it for cooking. You're using it to make baby formula. We use water for everything, and we can't live without it. So how much you're actually getting, it's hard to determine. And the implications that for human health, that's scientists are still trying to figure that out.
So let's talk about, if these are microscopic, if they're making it through filters, could they be making it through skin, through our stomach lining, getting into our organs, right? Because if these particles are so tiny that we don't really have filters that will capture them, then maybe when we drink water, they're getting into our liver, our kidney, our endocrine system, our brains?
You know, these are very, very good questions.
And science I'm terrified just asking you this because I don't want to know the answer.
Right. We need to know the answer though, right? I mean, for us and for our future generations, we cannot leave them a planet that is contaminated. And, you know, we're living in the plastic age. We have passed the computer age. We're totally in the plastic age. If you look around you, I bet within 2 feet of you, you've got 500 things that are made of plastic. We depend on it every day. It's not a horrible product in and of itself. I mean, it's so useful. It makes our lives, you know, so much easier in so many ways. But we've become addicted to it. And I think the next level of research really will need to look at the nanoplastics, what you were just talking about. Those, you know, we're looking at things, you know, in a scale down to the micron level that will go through tissue. The nanoparticles will go through human tissue, will go through cells. And the technology really isn't even there in many places to even study that. There are a few places that can do that, but it really is the next step, I think, in discovering just how far plastic has infiltrated our lives.
So the microbeads, we may have gotten under control by passing regulations that stop their use in sort of everyday cosmetic items. But the fibers, the video mentioned, and you also mentioned things like acrylic paint, the tires of cars. I was surprised by the idea of clothing, but it shouldn't be because so much of our clothing today is synthetic. You know, I mean, natural fibers like wool or cotton are not as common as polyester. All those fleece jackets we'll be buying and, you know, or might already own, of course, for the winter, you know, socks, gloves, everything. So much of our clothing is synthetic, but we don't think about the fact that it's a byproduct of the petroleum industry. We don't link our clothing to oil from the ground. Is that possibly a very huge source of the origins of these microfibers, that every time we wash our clothes, we're releasing them into the water systems?
You're absolutely right. I mean, from the studies that we've read and reported on and the experts that we've spoken with, I mean, you're talking about maybe as much as 1 million tons a year of microfibers. Now, think about how small a fiber is to get to and how many of those you would need to get to 1 million tons. Like, that is epic. And that is, and so that's what's being released into the waterways. So there's no doubt. But you know, we should back up and say, you know, it's also in the air. I have carpet in my house, and it's, you know, it's stain, you know, the stain resistant carpet. Well, that stain resistant carpet is synthetic. And every time I walk across the carpet with my shoes, I'm going to be releasing tiny bits of microplastic into the air. Same thing with furniture. So yeah, really, we've created a world that's fairly unsafe when you think about it and our exposure to it. The question is, how much exposure is unhealthy?
Right. So let's talk about the impact on human health. I mentioned we don't quite know yet, right, what the impacts are because it hasn't been studied. But the effect of plastic on animals or some animals, some organisms has been studied.
Correct. We spoke with a researcher named Chelsea Rockman, who's now in Toronto, and she did one of the first studies looking at the transmission of microplastics through shellfish and sort of gauging the health of that animal, and how long those microplastics would stay in the animal before they would get released back out. So we do know. We know, and that's those studies, that if the surface area of microplastics, even though they're small, is very large. And that is very good for absorbing toxins or bacteria that they might come in contact with. Now, there's a variety of different research showing, you know, how well that might happen, or how, you know, maybe it's not happening as much as we think it might be. But regardless, some of it is happening. And so those toxins are attaching to these these plastic particles, and then being ingested by the lower parts of our food chain. I mean, all those things get eaten by bigger things, right? We eat plankton, are eating it. We know that the plankton are being eaten by a variety of different kinds of fish. I mean,
people are kind of aware of, say, like mercury contamination in tuna. I'm wondering if this similar model applies, the same way we think of limiting our fish intake because we're worried about mercury content, and, you know, the bigger the fish, the bigger its cumulative effect. Is that similar to plastic?
That is a very good question. And I think the science is still out on that, about what amount of contamination, what amount of ingesting plastics is not healthy?
Right, because plastic lasts for practically ever, right? I mean, that's the biggest part of the issue, is that this is a material, and that's why it's so used, so ubiquitous all around us, because it doesn't wear down very much. I mean, our landfills are filled with plastic, and it'll be around for generations. So that's the advantage and the disadvantage.
Exactly. We've made more plastic in the last 10 years than in the last century combined. And if you think about that and the relationship we have to that, and now we know what we know we're doing to ourselves, and because it takes so long to break down, I mean, we're talking about this is going to be an issue for multiple generations. And you know, that's why it's sort of imperative. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to make this a global story, because it affects everybody all over the world, no matter where you live. And, hopefully the story will spur more further research on this topic, and maybe even start to, legislation, I think, is key. You know, hopefully it starts to get into the heads of people, like, we can't have a world without clean water. We can't survive as a species without clean water. And, you know, even though we can't attribute a lot of recent studies, like, say, the rate of male infertility or testicular cancer rates to specific plastics, we do know that those things are sort of symptoms of the chemicals used to make those plasticizers. So will scientists ever be able to say, yes, you ate these fish, and because of that, you've got such cancer? That's going to be nearly impossible to do, because we're, just the contamination level that we're all exposed to. But if we don't start doing something about that now, when will we, right? I mean, the red flags are up, and hopefully something will happen.
Well, Chris, a lot of times when people think about these sorts of studies, we want to take personal action to protect ourselves, even though, of course, political action is more effective, protects more people. But I can imagine some of my audience might be thinking, they tested tap water, I'm going to drink only plastic bottled water. And a lot of people still have this idea that bottled water is cleaner and safer than drinking water. So how do you address that issue? Because I understand that the study specifically looked at tap water, right? So, what do you say to those people who might say, well, maybe bottled water is cleaner?
We did test 3 bottled water samples sort of at the very end of our study. We're like, well, we know now that it's in tap water. How about bottled water? And we sent 3 bottled water samples from 3 leading U.S. brands and found microfibers in those as well. If you go out and you buy bottled water, you're only contributing to the problem.
Right.
You're not solving it for yourself. You're still going to get plastic in you, but now you've also created more plastic in the environment that will eventually, there's only a fraction of plastic that even ends up in a recycling bin. Another fraction that gets into our landfills, but the majority of it somehow escapes into our environment. And that's the plastic that's getting in us, right? So,
Is recycling plastic or greater rates of recycling going to be part of the sort of spectrum of solutions to this crisis?
I believe so. I mean, there are already, NGOs that are working on a circular plastic economy whereby, maybe we don't need, so we have 7 resin codes, right? You've seen those recycled.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they're recycle codes, but they're really resin codes. It tells you basically what kind of plastic is in plasticizers making up the plastic that you're using at that moment. And we have a great graphic on our website to look at that really breaks that down and what the health effects could be from those particular kinds of plastics. But there are people like Richard Thompson, who's out of Plymouth University in England, who's working with trade to come up with a way to make maybe it's just one single type of plasticizer that is recyclable, that's safe and usable by all of industry. So we don't need all these other chemicals added to our plastics. It will eventually come back to society saying, hey, this is an issue that I'm not comfortable with. I don't like that I'm giving my kid, a bottle made with a formula that has plastic in it. So what am I going to do?
And honestly, even if you're breastfeeding your child, if you're drinking water that has plastic in it, your body might be contaminated. Who knows? I mean, I'm assuming at some point there might be some studies that might test breast milk for plastic microfibers. It's all around us. Yeah. It's all inside us.
So there is, there's already a study. It was done in, I believe, 1998 or maybe it was 2008, a few years ago, actually, that looked at babies being born contaminated. Ugh. And what they found is that babies are born with maybe 288 synthetic chemicals that would not be natural to them.
Through the womb while they're in fetuses.
They're born contaminated, which is one of the reasons there's never going to be a human control group to be able to tell you what kind of cancer you get from having a certain plastic. And I think that's, that's probably the scariest part. Is we can't wait though, right? We can't wait for those pieces of research because they'll never happen. It's too impossible.
Yeah, so, let's just actually clarify. I mean, when scientists do studies to try to find a correlation between disease and a certain contaminant, they have to compare it with something that's free of the contamination, run the same effects on both groups, the control group and the non-control group, in order to be able to come to a conclusion. But we will never be able to get a control group because there is so much plastic everywhere that we don't have a plastic-free environment to have a control sample. I mean, it's different from, say, linking smoking with with lung cancer, because you can find populations that don't smoke, but you can't find plastic-free populations.
Exactly.
All right, Chris, what about also humans, just human beings, us, society, trying through our consumer power? I know it's tempting to use consumer pressure, but sometimes it can also be part of the spectrum of solutions, trying through our consumer power to just not buy so much plastic when there are non-plastic options such as glass or metal. We're talking about storage or cotton or wool when we're talking about clothing, that we should opt for those or buy used rather than brand new.
Exactly. And I think we have to be careful, like cotton and wool, like those have their own baggage with them as far as contamination.
Wait, what?
Yeah, what is our personal responsibility? I think that's the biggest question. What can we do as in everyday life to minimize our exposure to plastics in the first place, and then hopefully prevent future generations from having to deal with such a large problem? The little stuff, and you see it all the time, is like, do we really need a straw to drink out of a glass? And
And
there are
restaurants
times
give
probably.
straws all the time to people. It's just a standard thing. You get a glass of something and you're given a straw that's wrapped in paper, and then you
Well,
might use it
it's wrapped
impulsively.
in plastic
Or,
around
yeah,
here.
that too.
I was saying this earlier, just taking the milk, your milk lid off of your milk jug, if you're using milk. There's a little piece of plastic that kind of binds that to the lid, right? That you don't want that seal broken. You wouldn't buy it if it was broken. However, that little seal, that little piece of plastic is going to last for 500 years or more. So we have to really limit how we think about our relationship to plastics, and find ways to just cut down as much as possible, I think. Wherever that can be. For me, that is, I take my own bags to the grocery store all the time. And I did that more before this story came out. Now I will casually, nicely put my straw back on the waiter's or waitress's tray, because it's, we don't need those straws. And there are other things like that we can do. I launder my synthetic clothing half as much as I used to. I figure, it's made to be worn. As long as it doesn't stink and it's not standing up by itself, then I'll keep wearing it until I can, and I do one big load, and I'll wash that, and I'll hang stuff out to dry if I can, versus putting it in a dryer, because the dryer is just sending those, whatever didn't come off in the wash is just sending that back out outside in the air. But we do have to take some personal responsibility.
Right, and reusing things rather than tossing them away. If you're buying a tub of yogurt, reuse the container instead of buying more Tupperware. I mean, simple things like that. There's so much we can do to keep the things that are made out of plastic lasting longer, because that's the best thing about plastic, is that it lasts a long time. So let's take advantage of that rather than disposing of them. Well, Chris, give out a website for Orb Media and where people can find out about the article and read about it.
Great. Well, www.orbmedia.org is our main website. And there you can learn all about us and all the different kinds of stories that we've worked on over the last few years. Our story is called Invisibles, The Plastic Inside Us, and that's one of the stories it's linked to on that main homepage.
That's orbmedia.org. Chris, thanks so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is Chris Tyree, a journalist with Orb Media. He's the lead author of Invisibles, The Plastic Inside Us, and we've been discussing that new study and the article. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.